and welcome to episode 23 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Schuffler. This week on the podcast, I am joined by the tremendously talented and brilliant Noah Daniel. I have been on shows with her a few times, and most often the panel show on Ed Mentors on Voice Ed Radio, and she never ceases to impress me. In fact, the last time we were on the air, I tweeted out that listening to Noah talk, quote, always makes me feel calm and excited like I imagine meditation or yoga must feel like. I meant it then, and I think you all will feel it through this episode. Noah and I talk about a lot, from her signature projects known as BOBS, which are tremendously powerful and awesome tools that encompass a lot of what she believes about education, her thoughts on the layers of inside and outside classroom problems, student choice, and her general and seemingly infinite passion for her students and students on the whole. I honestly don't see how you could walk away from this one and not be blown away. So, sit back and enjoy episode 23 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Noah Daniel. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Schuffler. I don't even know that words are going to succeed in describing my excitement today, because I get to interview and discuss with someone I'm just going to call a really good friend, even though, as we admitted recently, we've never seen each other's faces, the one and only Noah Daniel. Can you say hi for me?
I can say hi. I can say happy Monday. I can say whatever works for you, Brad. Hello.
I love it. Noah and I have been on a couple different episodes of On Ed Mentors together, and I don't know, I feel like we've done other stuff too together. I don't know. I just was 30 seconds ago interviewed for your show, the P3 podcast, the personal playlist podcast. Yeah. There you go. I got that right. And I just always get excited talking to you. I think I said that in the chat on a recent episode of just like, it's just exciting. It's just fun.
I'm happy. You may know what to say when we were on the chat, or we were on Ed Mentors, and you wrote something nice about me, and I blushed, and it's very hard to respond on Twitter to such things, but it made me feel good. Thank you.
Hey, I mean it. I forget what I said. It was something ridiculous, but also true. Like, you make me excited and calm at the same time, I think was
exactly
what it was.
What you said, by the way. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I stand by it, even if I can't remember
it. Okay. You did okay.
So for my audience who does not follow me every time I speak on Voice Ed, who are you and what are you up to these days?
I am Noah Daniel, and I'm a teacher first, foremost, and always. I started a consulting company this year called Building Outside the Blocks, and it's really the name of what I do, or how I would describe what it is that I do. For many years now, I've been building projects that help students build skill, autonomy, and community in minimal class time. And I started writing about it, and I started presenting on it, and BOBS have become a thing. So now I've done a BOBcast, and I've done a bit of BOB, and I do a bite of BOB at lunchtimes, and I play around with the BOB title. But the idea is really about finding ways that are project-based learning that happen mostly at home, where the classroom is a place where we cultivate community and we celebrate each other, and students build skill over time through feedback.
Awesome.
That's BOB in a nutshell. You know,
it is. When I first met you, I was like, Noah's BOBS. What the heck is that? Like, I have no, that's weird. Your name's Noah Daniel. I don't understand. So it took me a while to figure out, because I'm not actually willing to do any kind of research because I'm lazy. And,
It was on people, and it was something that I deliberated for about 1 second, and it just felt right. So I'm glad you figured it out.
Yeah, I did eventually. It took like 7 shows of us being on together to really figure out what it meant, but I got there.
It's really like, even though Building Outside the Blocks are the name of my project, it's how I would describe my teaching. So I'm kind of a sit on the desk, take risks, try to find ways to reach out beyond the framework of what school offers to give kids opportunity to be and see themselves at school. So Building Outside the Blocks was kind of just the perfect thing. And it's funny, because when somebody asked me, what are these things that you're doing in class? I said, I don't know, it's like I'm building outside the blocks, but I don't know what it is. And it took me a month to sit with this person who was my mentor at the time every week. And she would say, so what is this? And I would say, I don't know what this is. They're projects and they all have things in common where students pick their presentation dates and they decide how they're going to present, but I don't know what this is. And after a month, I said, this is called building outside the blocks. And this is a thing that I'm going to do. And so once I articulated it, I could start writing about it. And once I started writing about it, I realized that there were these things that I had been doing for so many years and I didn't even know I was doing them. And they were good pedagogy, but more than that, it was something different. And I've yet to see some of these things exist. So I've started to kind of assert myself as saying, okay, well, here are projects and here's project-based learning and these are Bob's. And it's taken me a while to get the guts up to say, I am doing something unique and it impacts students in a positive way. And that's why I share my projects for free. Like, I just want more students to experience it. And in the same way, you just came on my podcast and the P3 came from my classroom. And if I can inspire teachers to use the P3 or the personal playlist experience in their classroom, especially with middle school kids, but even in high school, to get students to use music to tell the stories of their lives is so much better and more powerful and deep than saying, okay, what are your interests? Fill in the blanks and send it in to me. We'll share it with nobody at all. So I find it a very wonderful tool to not just see the whole person, but to share that person with the class community where they grow from each other and they learn to support each other. And it's been wonderful for the last, I guess, really since I've articulated it, I'm 7 years in. And every year I create new Bob projects and every year I have something else that I can say really works. So it's exciting.
That's just awesome. I feel like just listening to that is the best. I'm terrible about actually reading people's blogs, even when they're friends. I don't even read my own blog half the time and I write it. So that'll give me an idea. But I feel like that description of it just speaks to me on so many levels. But beyond that, I get the passion you have for student learning. Like, it's never, no part of that story was about you necessarily. It was about you articulating what you already knew were doing for your kids, if that makes any sense. Like, it was really about what was happening for the kids.
It's funny because as a person, sometimes when you're sharing, you feel egotistical or you're like, oh, this sounds like it's about me, but it's not about me. And how do you assert that? So I really appreciate that you could hear the genuine love I have for teaching and that you know that this is all about them. And if I talk about it or if I share it, it's because it works. So I want other people to do it and I want to encourage them to just dip a toe into the Bob pool. The water feels pretty fantastic and the kids feel good. They do. It's amazing what happens in my room. And that's the thing. Like, I saw kids who are so cruel to each other start to see new things about each other and appreciate them and treat them better because of what they saw in the safety of my room. I mean, this wasn't just little. Sometimes when I write a proposal or I find a new angle to what it is that I do, I realize that this helps with wellness. I'm presenting on Monday to for the Global Education Conference. I didn't know that what I was doing was connecting kids to the world, but I knew. And now I'm presenting on, so basically there are one-off Bobs and there are what I call tri-Bobs. And tri-Bobs are three building outside the blocks projects that happen over the course of a school year. And each time they revisit some skills and then a layer or dimension is added. So when I was given the privilege of teaching grade 6, 7, and 8 a few years ago, I had a view of the entire middle school that I'd never had before. And so I looked at all the curriculum and I thought, oh my God, I can build in 1 year and over 3 years. So what I call the trifecta of tri-Bobs is essentially this triad that I've created where each year of those 3 years of middle school, the students have a tri-Bob and they build not just a sense of the news and not just a connection to the world, but a sense of what matters to them in the world. And each year I add a new layer. So in grade 6, they learn about what news is. And in grade 7, they start thinking about bias and how perspective plays a role and how photography has such an essential role in telling stories. And then by grade 8, we look at how collaboration can play a role in retelling the news and have the students literally speaking. It's called news and schmooze, but basically they speak about the news and then they grow a skill and add a new aspect to the task. Anyway, I'm really excited to talk about it on Monday. I've never communicated that before because I didn't even know I was doing that. So it's neat.
Well, number one, I greatly appreciate your ability to name things because you've got that solid. Like, your naming is awesome. But I'm curious, you mentioned earlier and you're coming back to it now, like, what pushed you past the I don't have anything to share, or the what got you to the actually pushing this out there to people? Because I feel a lot of my episodes recently, we talked a lot about lurking and being involved in the community without necessarily giving your own ideas. But I also want to talk a little bit about what gets you past that. So what is it that got you from I'm doing this thing and it's cool and okay, I've given it a name. Now I'm going to write about it and also talk about it and also present about it and also share it and write up everything. I mean, what is it that got you to that next level?
So I had this incredible privilege. I had been teaching for 14 years. And when I came to the school that I just left, I received an academic coach who was my mentor. And besides becoming my very good friend, she continues to be my mentor. And she asked me these critical questions that I didn't know how to answer. So she would say, so what next? And I would say, I don't know. She's like, well, it can't be nothing. So I would have my week before I would have my half an hour with her. And I would come back and I was like, maybe I should write about it. She goes, okay, let's look at different places where you can send this. And she really was the person that not just made me feel like I had something valuable, but encouraged me to share it. And then I had another friend, who Zoe Scher, who said I had to go on Twitter. And I was like, Twitter, I'm kind of a late adopter of technology. Are you sure? And she said, just go check it out as a teacher and, you know, just see if it works for you. And all of a sudden I was in this world where people wanted to talk about teaching, where I was like this full teacher geek that nobody wanted to hear from in my school. I'm like, oh my God, I can talk about teaching all day long and all night long. Well, dude, I'm in. So I started learning all these things on Twitter, and it took me a while to start saying I had something to share. And little by little by little, you know, this self-deprecating thing was quieter, and this assertion that I did have a unique offering just got louder. And then it's opportunities like this, to be honest, Brad. Like, the first time Derek ever interviewed me for a podcast, or Shane, or Barbara Bray, I mean, that was a big deal to me. It's still a big deal to me because I'm like, little me, I have a voice. You want to hear what I say? And I feel like the students, you know, when you give them that opportunity to just be themselves and to say, you are a unique being and you have something beautiful to offer. I stopped apologizing all the time for having something to offer. That was really hard. It's always been hard being this person who builds outside the blocks. It's not an easy thing. And sometimes it seems spiteful, but I can't be anybody else than who I am. So this process has kind of helped me embrace myself, not just the projects, and stop apologizing all the time, which is nice.
You know, you just said something that spoke to me so much. You said it's really hard to be this person that's building outside the blocks all the time. And while I don't use that term, I think of that constant, you know, change agent or innovator or however you want to say it. And that is really hard. You're right. Being that guy that always has the ideas, or being that teacher, or being that coach, or being that administrator that has ideas for wanting to make change. And, you know, sometimes I want to come in and just change everything. And that is very isolating. You're 100% right. On a campus, that is very isolating. And then I bring it back to that Twitter, where Twitter's just full of change agents. Yeah. Like, that's the people talking. Like, and, you know, Voice Ed Radio is all change agents. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the people you mentioned are mutual friends through Voice Ed. And that's what it's about, is moving this conversation forward. And, you know, that cheesy, like, go find your tribe, go find your PLN thing. But there is something truly powerful about that when you're sitting on the fringes sometimes.
It's funny, too. I was presenting at an ed tech conference, and afterwards we all went out for a drink. And sitting with my people, all these people who at their schools don't talk about what it is that they do. And then they go and put on these stellar presentations, and they are the change. And yet, you know, in their school, they're just another teacher who does some quirky stuff on the side. And it was so nice to feel among these people where it's okay to go and do your job and do good work and collaborate and go home and then do this other more thing, or to push back a little bit, not necessarily always at your school, but in a world where pushing back is kind of par for the course. And speaking to people like you and finding people who deliberate ideas that so many people just accept or live with unconditionally, I love this. I feel so lucky every day of my life that I have outlets and conversations. Like, I was in a conversation with Stephen and Derek about learning, and I swear to you, it was...
By the way, I want to just point out for my audience, that's on Word in Progress, and I've listened to it twice.
Really?
Like, I'm going to throw that out there. It is so good. Like, your guys' discussion was amazing. So, I totally know what you're talking about, but I still want to hear your take on it. So, just want to throw that out there. So,
Brad, it was like, I had finally arrived in a place in my life and in my career where I got to be at the table of conversation. And that's all I think I really need. I wanted to have important conversations with people who wanted to have them with me. And here I was having the most important conversation. I mean, what is learning? How easy to take it for granted. And I learned something from being there. It still sits with me. I'm still in a quandary about it. But it's just so nice to be able to be with people who want to talk about it and who just don't want to take it all for granted. I love it. I'm so lucky. Oh my goodness. And then, you know, you have these very interesting ways about you. And in some ways, it's like you poke the bear and then you add this insightful comment. So you have a style that I so enjoy, and it challenges my thinking, and it's quippy, and it's, I really appreciate it. So I'm so happy to every time you're in the conversation too, because on Ed Mentors, even though our goal is to mentor pre-service and new teachers, I feel mentored and I learn so much from the teams that come out. And I know that there are conversations happening in staff rooms as a result of our conversations. And I mean, to be in a place where that can happen, I'm truly grateful. But like all the time, people are like sick of hearing me be grateful, but I can't help it. I am. I am.
Yeah, I have regularly stated the comment to my friends locally where I'm like, they're like, how's your podcast going? And I'm like, well, I'm kind of a big deal in Canada and I'm only half kidding about that. And they're like, what? I'm like, it doesn't matter. Don't really worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And you're right though. It's like such a cool, I don't know. There's something about it that is just so powerful. And even if it's, you know, I know you might feel this as well, but podcasting, it often feels like we're screaming into a void, or, you know, you really never know if anybody's even listening or anything. The stats are so questionable, and I don't really care that much because the conversations are so valuable to me that even if no one is listening, that's okay. I'm going to keep doing this thing because it's so much fun.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I'm so intrigued when people reach out to me and they say, oh, I heard this person on your podcast. I started following them and they're so amazing. Thank you so much. Or I heard these tunes on your podcast and I downloaded them because they're so cool. I just, that the idea that there's a ripple that started in my conversation, that all I was doing was facilitating, but because of what the people bring to the conversation and because the discussions really are rich, people are impacted and then something else happens. That's why I felt compelled to blog about all of them. So you too will be the feature of a blog post. And in it, I talk about the conversation, but I also put in a video of the whole song. So I'm excited to write yours, but for me, it's like how I keep it alive. So after I edit my podcast and it goes up in audio, I start writing the blog post and then I get to listen to it and relive it. And then when people reach out to me, I know it so intimately. Like Stephen was saying, okay, what if I quizzed you on the nostalgic song of every person that's come? And I'm pretty sure I could do all right. Like, I think I'd like to take on that challenge because I feel so deeply connected to the people who entrust me with these conversations. So it's a really neat thing. And you're right. Like, I know that there are statistics. I don't have them. Stephen has told me that he can give them to me, and I don't think I want to know. I'm happy that I have an audience growing and that it's not going to nowhere, but I'm also happy that I just get to have these conversations. I don't know. I got big dreams and I want fame, but in a different kind of way, I guess. Sorry, that was from movie fame, not really from my
anyway. It was funny, one of my I don't even really know where to go. Like, I agree with you so much in that I struggle so often because I have access to my own stats. I don't host through the way you guys do. And so I have access to my own stats, and I've had to force myself to stop checking them so often because there's a part of my brain that just wants to know. It's not that I want them to be large. I just want to know. No, I want to know what they are. But then at the same time, it's like, like I said, I value the conversation so much that even if the podcast is just in name only and is the excuse to get people to be willing to talk to me, then it's totally worth it.
Yeah, but you also have to have a good offering. Like, we all have busy lives. So I wanted to talk to you. I know lots of people who've wanted to talk to you because you're you. And that's the thing that makes it so compelling. And it's funny about the stats. So I, for a long time on my blog, had not looked at the stats. And then I looked and I saw that not one person had read one of my first blog posts on soft skills, which is how we ended up talking about it on
with On Ed last week.
Yeah. On Ed Mentors, because I was like, it's not just that it was well written. It was okay. I found my voice over time in my blog, and that was cool for me as a journey to figure out that I could be myself in my writing, and I didn't have to pretend to be somebody, or that I didn't have to worry so much about how people were perceiving it. I could just write, because I love to write. It's one of my favorite things to do. But I saw that not one person had read it, and I was upset. So I kind of posted it to say, you should read this, but not because it's my writing. I think these are conversations we need to have. So I redirected it, and then we ended up having the conversation last Thursday night on Ed Mentors. And it was such a good conversation. And now people are talking to me about soft skills, and I'm reading articles about how the terminology is a misnomer. And then Stephen in his brilliance talked about how soft skills is really about how they're malleable and they're shapeable in different kinds of ways and not as measurable. And it seemed better the way to refer to them. Anyway, it's these conversations that make me a better person, a better teacher, and even a better parent. So yeah.
And I think we're all benefited by interacting with Stephen. I think, like, there's so many times on shows I'm on or listening to, and he just drops a one-liner, and everybody's like, oh, that just, wait, now we got to rethink everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that title, actually, Rethink Everything.
And then one day he'll not be too busy and actually be on my show. It'll be great.
He's a really, really busy guy, but in the best of ways. Like, he's got this offering, and it's funny when VoiceEd had their first tagline, changing the way you talk about education in Canada, I was like, yay, Canada has VoiceEd Radio. And because it's become...
And then a silly Yanks jumped in.
Well, it's not just you wonderful Yanks adding to the conversation. It's the idea that there are no borders, right? Like, the access and what it means to live in a global world. There are no borders. So we're changing the way we talk about education, period. And your podcast and the conversations you add to, and all these amazing people who share time with VoiceEd. I mean, and the people he invites, it's evolving all the time. And it's such an incredible offering. It really is. And the fact that he's trying to keep it sponsor free right now is also a really interesting thing to see how that evolves. Yeah. Anyhow.
I agree.
I like it.
I do too. I will stand by what I said. Every time I listen to you, Noah, I'm simultaneously excited and calmed. Like, there's a part of me that wants to go out and change the world, and another part that's like, yeah, but I could just keep talking about it too. This is fun.
That's cool. I'll take that. I really will. I mean, I love to talk about teaching, and I love to talk about teaching with people who love to talk about teaching. So rock on, brother.
Well, hey, absolutely. I'm going to headbang out to this one. So that's an appropriate podcasting trick to reference a show that is not at all connected except for the two of us. So far, I'm a professional. And in my vein of professionalism with the lack of transition, I'm going to go to my first question. Oh. And I think it actually does kind of lead, other than the aside there, thinking about education as a whole, And one of the questions that started this whole podcast journey for me is, what is currently the biggest problem facing education?
Well, today, because I'm thinking about it today, are the layers that are happening simultaneously in a classroom. And so outside of a classroom, there are different challenges in education than there are inside a classroom. But I would say that inside the classroom is the microcosm we need to look at. So the biggest challenge is not just how do you differentiate for all the different kinds of learners, but how do you simultaneously do that and meet the emotional needs, the ever-growing emotional needs of learners. And the amount of kids that are growing up with challenges who, you know, you turn to devices for their only answer and their only source of socialization and their only source of joy. These are the challenges that manifest in the classroom in ways that evolve the learner and in ways that make teaching individuals in a collective space so interesting and so challenging. I believe that differentiation is so important and learning who's in the room is key to that. But I don't think that so many of the people, even in the funding formulas for education, have a real understanding of what it is that teachers face every single day. And that is the challenge, that disconnect between the people who make policy and the people who are on the ground every day doing the work. And it's wonderful work and it's special work, but it needs a rejig in 100 different ways.
I want to focus on this first part first, and I'm going to come to some of the other stuff, but you said the question you asked is, how do you differentiate between all the learners and meet the ever-growing emotional needs of students? I would like you to sort of expand upon that ever-growing comment. What is it maybe that is causing those emotional needs to become larger? Because I think a lot of teachers, even those who are not necessarily change agents, would agree with that statement. But I'm wondering if you can unpack that a little bit for me.
Well, I think there are two layers to that. The time that students spend outside of school is so challenging more today than ever before, whether it's because they have so much privilege and so much freedom or no privileges and no freedom. The complexity of the children's lives are significantly different. I've been teaching for over 2 decades, and there are notable changes in the profile of learners and the bevy of challenges that come into a space. So where ADHD was, you know, 1 or 2 kids in the beginning, now we're looking at 20% to 30% of a class who don't know how to listen, who don't know how to calm their bodies. These are challenges, and they're big challenges. So yes, we have to change how we teach, but add on to that the fact that they're not really present because they're worrying about how they're going to get home or eat dinner, or they're alone a lot. I mean, the parenting challenges are exacerbated by the realities that most people face today and what it takes to live a good life. So that's one aspect of that challenge. The other aspect of that challenge is our access to technology, which is in some ways more accessible than healthy food, has created new challenges for learners. And as much as I like EdTech, and I'm not saying that I don't, I am really concerned with the amount of screen time that kids are on in schools today and what that does. The data is insane. And so that has sweeping ramifications for the longevity of learning. And then you add to that the fact that kids don't know how to socialize, that kids don't know how to not be busy, that kids don't know how to make their own fun, how to, you know, have time to themselves and decide to build a fort. I mean, these are the things they don't know how to do sometimes. I was in a classroom and they had indoor recess and they're like, well, we have to kill each other, Mrs. Daniel, because we have no toys to play with. I was like, what are you talking about? See this little fleck on the floor? That's your puck. Somebody make a net. Like, what are you talking about? And they really didn't know. And I used to see students create maker spaces from wherever they were. And now it's awesome that there are maker spaces, but kids don't know how to do these things for themselves. So these are generational challenges. And then you add on to that the fact that the funding formula results in very little money being allocated to support individual learners. So you have more students in a classroom who have individual needs that can't be met by a single person, a single educator in the classroom. And the result is either those students become more disassociated from what's happening in the class, or then the class doesn't benefit because those individuals end up being the focus of a class. So I'm oversimplifying what is a very layered problem. But we're seeing more outside stuff coming in the classrooms with more inside classroom stuff not getting the support or the dollars that need to happen in order to do great work. I mean, I hear all the time when teachers are talking about their skills and what they need to go to learn and develop their skills, and there's no money or there's no time for them to do it. I don't know how that's supposed to happen. I mean, I do so much of my own professional development seeking because I'm an obsessive learner and I'm curious and I like to know. But a lot of people who aren't, or whose lives have more pressure at the end of the day, they can't go spend 3 hours at home every night doing work and figuring things out. And that's a challenge. So all of that together in one classroom scenario makes it incredible when kids are growing and learning on their learning continuum. And it makes it fantastic that educators want to show up every day and do their work. And it makes it inspirational that students come out of those systems equipped to live in the world that exists. I'm amazed all the time, but I'm also concerned about how this divide is going to grow and what we're doing proactively to handle that. I said a lot. I hope that's okay.
You did. I took like an extra 3 pages of notes just then. I'm not 100%. Wow. Ugh. But I have to. Okay. So if I wanted to have one overall question, and I think that's how I'm going to approach this. And how many of these things are truly new problems? Now, I mean, I obviously access to technology is a new problem, but it won't be going forward. It's going to constantly become more and more of a problem if you take it from your perspective about screen time being scary and everything else.
I don't think it's scary. I think it has to have balance. I'll say it like that. So I think kids need to get outside and breathe fresh air and talk to other people face to face. I think that has to happen more, and it's happening less. So I love what technology can do. I just worry when I see paperless classrooms, and it sounds great, but kids are on a screen all day long. That worries me. It really does. But is there one problem? I would say it's the layers, because as one teacher who goes away still sometimes crying over a learner, and people keep saying toughen up, and I don't think I can do it. It's not that I'm fixed minded. I just mean it's very hard to care about learners and not get choked up once in a while when you hit a wall or they hit a wall, and you know that you just haven't found the right ramp up for them. So I get frustrated and I try my best to stay positive. But if by the end of a week, I haven't connected with every single one of my learners and moved them forward, I don't feel okay to go into the weekend. I just don't. So it's feeling harder and harder to achieve that some days. And I mean, part of the reason why I love helping teachers is I know the feeling and I can help other people over the hurdles. I'm still working on the tools to help myself, which I guess is true for a lot of people and a lot of things. I know that there are things we can't solve, and I know it's okay. And I know that awareness really helps, but, that balance of soft skills and hard skills in the classroom when there are more skills that need to be taught and more challenges to teaching them, I think, is the biggest issue.
You know, something you said in there, you said it's becoming harder and harder to connect to every learner.
No, I didn't say that. it's harder and harder to move every learner on their continuum. Connecting with learners, I mean, that's what Bobs do. I can connect to learners and I can have learners connect to themselves. That's something I'm pretty good at. It's about the moving them part on their learning continuum that can be so challenging for me.
Okay, but is that because there are more types of learners now? So have we created is this the byproduct of some kind of more accepting society in which we are allowing students and children to be individuals and not trying to force them to fit into a mold? And that is making us more aware of a pre-existing problem, or is this some kind of new problem?
That is a fantastic question. I don't know, but I love it. Okay, I don't know. I'm going to think about it. We'll talk again at some point. I don't know.
Because, I don't know. It's almost like a positive spin on it, okay? These are constant problems. So, I guess I've been getting a lot of pushback recently. And I've started sharing out a lot more change-based ideas where I'm getting further and further away from the line of balancing being polite, and also wanting to see change, which is just sort of where I'm at on my line or continuum at this point. But I've started to get some pushback because I've been a little more forceful in the idea of, okay, what we're doing is not working, let's move on. And some people are starting to push back and say, but what do you mean it's not working? It's been working for years. And I don't have the response I'm comfortable with yet. I have a lot of responses, but I don't have the one I'm good with, in that you're right in a sense that it worked to produce you, but I think there's a lot of extensions to say that it was working, still works, and a lot of other things about that. And I think that, especially talking to teachers, they're quick to say, it worked, look at me. But there's a lot of flaws in that argument, and now I'm starting to wonder if the acceptance of more people, this is sort of the consequence of that.
I love that you see it in a positive way, and I love that we have definitely accepted more types of learners, that there are less compartments because people don't fit neatly into one. I love that. I love that about teaching. I love that my teaching is as personal as possible because I see who's in my room. But at the same time, the complexity of those non-compartments, the various Venn diagrams where there are so many middle spaces and not one thing that we can grasp onto in the learner, makes the challenge a layered challenge. So yes, I used to know how to teach this, and I've had to do these three things in the last 5 years to teach this differently to the people in a space. And I now have these three parts to my lessons so that I can gradually release all of the aspects of this task or this skill. All of those things have evolved my practice and made me a better teacher. But at the end of the day, it takes me longer and more tries to move each individual in an entire class. And because of that, I find it more challenging. I think that's, yeah. I don't know. I really like what you got me thinking about, though. I love the positivity of it. It's so much more hopeful than how I was. I feel almost guilty that I described it that way, because the way you said it is so more in line with who I am.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I totally made that jump on the spot, and I only thought of it because of the way you phrase something. So really, it's just you speaking through me.
No, but that's the beauty of collaboration, right? Like, you walk in with your perspective and somebody walks in and you come out with something new, and you can't really figure out where it began because it began through the two of you or the multitude of you. So I'm really grateful for that, Brad. Thank you so much. I am going to think about it some more, though, and get back to you.
No, trust me. I've already like bookmarked that comment as something I want to write a blog post on myself. So that'll be out there.
Okay, I'll read it. Nice.
So I am, you know, you talked about connecting to all learners, and I kind of think I might know where you might go with my second question, but I'm gonna lead into it anyways.
I am a touch and predictable, Brad. A touch.
A touch. That's okay. I think a great teacher is sometimes predictable, and other times you have no idea what they're gonna do tomorrow. So I think that's a fair description. So my second question is, what is something you're doing that you wish all other teachers would do in their classrooms?
Dude, I really, really wish it was Bob's. Not because
I saw that coming. I'm not gonna lie. I saw that one coming.
You know what it is? It's like, you know, when you're starting a movement and you see those wild people, like that TED Talk when you start a movement. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I do. I haven't actually watched it recently, but I do know what you're talking about.
So like they're at this concert and the narrator's explaining how there's the one weird dude who's dancing how he feels kind of to the side, and everybody's doing their thing, listening to the music. And then slowly, slowly, you see these other interesting dudes going over and dancing how they feel with this dude. And eventually it hits a tipping point where that becomes what people do. I don't need the critical mass because I want to write a bestseller, although that would be fun too. I need the critical mass because I want to be in a community of people who are creating Bobs and talking about the Bobs they created. I was in a classroom for 1 week and I thought, I've never done a 1 week Bob. And the students were going into a unit on humor. So I thought, wouldn't it be funny if they figured out what humor was based on them joke telling? So I created what I called It's No Joke, but they renamed it to LOL because they're texters. So I now have a new Bob where the kids created the success criteria of clarity, fluency, and volume, and gave feedback to each other like is required in the form of questions, comments, critiques based on the students' jokes, and it was very accessible. You could sign up for a date over the week when you wanted to present, and all you had to do, you didn't have to memorize it, all you had to do was tell a joke. And at the end of it, I had this group of students who I didn't know, who not only got to know each other, we laughed together, and we created the definition of humor based on that 1 week of them sharing. And I saw a transformation in the class. Now, I couldn't continue it like I would do in my own class, but when I listened to their feedback, because I always use student reflections for my own growth, and they're like, we have never chosen our own dates for anything before. And I thought, that is a minute part of all Bobs. That is something all teachers should experience and all students should understand, that if these are the dates for the presentations, why can't they decide, well, you know what? I'm really busy this week. My presentation is going to be on this date within the parameter of selected dates given by the teacher. Like, why can't kids do that? Why does the 15th presenter on a day have to have that slot when nobody's listening anymore? I mean, well, that's how it happened to me. I was teaching grade 7 and I did a thing called Culture Vultures where the students every Friday had presentations, and I started to get bored, and I decided that 15 minutes was about fair for any kind of presentations, and that wasn't fair for kids when they were doing book reports to have an entire day of presentations, because the first kid, everybody listened to, and the 15th kid, not so much. So I thought that the audience had to have an active role. And slowly over the years of doing that is where I started to create the criteria for Bobs. So even if you don't use one of my projects, but you create your own project where you decide that over this many days or weeks or months, students are presenting, and students get to say, you know what? I want to go first, or I want to go last, or I need to see a few presented before I'm ready to go. And you sign up for that date and you own it. And you learn sometimes after the fact that you didn't make a good choice, but because you're in a Bobified class, you're going to have another opportunity to do it, whether it's another one-off Bob or going through a tri-Bob. You have multiple opportunities to learn about yourself, where you like to go. That's just one simple residual of going through the Bob approach. But then when students get to choose their own product and how they like to do things, you should see the ed tech that they spend time on. I don't know any of the things that they're using. They teach me. Like years ago when they first taught me about Minecraft, they were doing it for Master Storyteller, which is a three-part Bob that starts with students reading a picture book to the class, and then it evolves to them reading a different picture book, but using some sort of visual to complement the text. And then eventually, after a year of teaching them how to write and going through the 6+1 writing traits, the students are ready to present and tell their own original story. And sometimes it's a personal narrative, but they learn how to tell it with flair and how to tell it with a visual. And students do so many different things. And whether it's ed tech or making puppets or making a collage, they get to be themselves. I mean, they celebrate the fact that they'll spend 15 to 20 hours on a product for my class, not because they want to talk about how much time they're spending, but that's how committed they are to the work. And these are the kinds of things that I celebrate in students and why I want everybody to experience a Bob. If you only took what's now the personal playlist that started off as the personal soundtrack, even though it was part of a tri-bob, if you only did this, I mean, I had a parent of a student of mine say, Noah, I need some of your projects. Like, can I have some? I'm starting to teach. I'm so excited. I'm teaching grade 8. Can I please have some? So I gave her a whole bunch, and she started with what was called the personal soundtrack. And I think I actually have one of her testimonials on my website. She said, I had a student come in and tell the story of her mother going through chemo and the song that they would play. And this child who was like really quiet came to life in the room. And even if it's only during that presentation, what you learn about that child, you can use. And I don't mean to use like, oh yeah, remember when your mom was going through chemo, but you see a little bit more of them. You see a little bit more of their life, and then you know how to teach them better. So the Bob is a gift that keeps on giving. And if you look at the whole class community and what happens in a space where kids listen to each other and give each other feedback, and your role as a teacher is more formative than it is evaluative. And it's about helping students improve based on feedback and not based on grades. It really is a different way of doing things. And because so little class time is offered for a Bob, that's better than homework. I mean, with all the data on homework, this is work that students do at home that they self-direct and backwards design in view of their selected date. So there are so many aspects to the approach. Like, I give out my projects for free, and I'm cool with that. But when I make a presentation, I'm very particular about all the aspects of the Bob approach that make it unique. And it's them working in tandem to support the learner and to support continuous growth that makes them so powerful. But the community aspect is not to be overlooked. I literally sit at the side. I take pictures. Sometimes I take video and I write notes to the learner. But the class owns it. They come in the room. They look at the agenda. They're like, hey, Mrs. Daniel, I see we've got these people on the win today. And those people that are sharing their what's in a name. You learn about their culture. You learn about their histories. You learn the story about why their parents chose that name for you and the fight that they had the night before about the hockey player whose name it was supposed to be, who lost and whatever. I mean, it's amazing what you learn about people. And I don't mean just students. I mean people. They get to be seen and valued as total human beings. And I love my projects. I'm happy to share them with people. But I'm even happier when people say, oh my gosh, I came up with a Bob. And I have this vision one day. I never developed my Facebook page because my vision is to have a community of people who build Bobs. And I'll always be the chief building officer, but I hope that people contribute to this, I don't know, bank of projects that people can use with the Bob approach, and it will make a difference for students. Okay, I went on too long, but that's what I would.
No, not at all. I was enthralled, and that came across as sarcastic, but I didn't mean it to. I was hanging on every word. Wow. All right, I'm done. I'm doing Bobs all the time now. That's it.
So it's so funny, you know. It takes the presentation sometimes to make people understand. Like, I know this woman reached out to me the other day and she's like, I've read everything you've ever written and I've read your website. Please, please send me the what's in a name outline. I want to do it. And I was like, absolutely. And she says, you don't want anything for it? I said, all I want is feedback. I want to know how your students experienced it. Like, this is for me, the greatest reward is knowing that I want to cry a little. I don't know why. It's that something I created out of my love for teaching can impact other people and make them feel good. I don't know why I'm crying. I'm feeling emotional about it. It's not just like, it's my creativity and it's my vision, but it's also, it's for the kids. It really does make a difference to them.
We've had an emotional couple of hours right now, Noah. Between my P3 got real for a little bit there, and now this, like, man, God, I don't know how I'm gonna go about the rest of my night when we close this off.
It's just got real. Okay, let's be silly now. I think that's the best answer.
Yeah. Let's be silly. I like it. Let's go with that. And actually, you know what? I have a follow up question, and maybe I'll come back to it. But I wanna lighten things up a little bit. And wow, I'm speechless. I've never made anyone. I mean, no one has ever cried on my show before. So I appreciate that. That's like a moment of true honesty there. I felt that was so real.
I don't listen. I have been told my entire career to toughen up and not take it all so seriously. And I'm going to take your advice to not take it all so seriously, but I don't think I ever really want to toughen up because it serves my learners. And even though it doesn't always serve me, it's who I am. And I just have to embrace it. So I had a moment. It's over. I'm good. But, that was real. That's what happens. It's that cool for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I'm not even going to follow that up. I'm going to let that stand alone, and we're just going to straight move into my third question.
All right.
And my third question is probably my personal favorite, but it is, who is the best teacher you've ever had?
I've had so many good teachers, but, the best one I ever had. I really have had so many. Okay. I will say it was my grade 7 teacher, Sharon Levy. Thank you, Sharon Levy. I think it was because of Lord of the Flies. I had never read a novel that rocked my world before, and I had never studied characters in the way that I did. And I didn't understand that learning literature could be life-changing. So I think that's why I think I would say her. It definitely changed school for me.
Okay. So, I mean, I remember reading Lord of the Flies. I remember that book. And I remember it being intense. I don't know that that's quite the word I would have used at the time. But in retrospect, I remember it being like, huh, this is real. This is violent and odd.
Yeah,
and
it was raw. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a phenomenal book. But I can't remember the name of the teacher that I read that book with. So what is it that she did that pushed it over that edge for you?
Again, like I think about the word character. And as a teacher, you know, you can say, oh, well, character can be unpacked through description, through action, or through dialogue. And we could talk about it that way. But we really looked at these characters in a way. I didn't know anybody like any of these people. There were always some connections that I could make, but these were characters I didn't know in a situation I didn't fully understand. I mean, the historical context of why they ended up on this island and why they were being flown away to safety, like there was so much in that. And then eventually when I remember when I was reading The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, I was like, oh, the air raid. So they're going to their uncles and these guys had to go to the island, or they had to go somewhere else. They weren't supposed to be on this island. It's been a long time since I read the text, but again, like the idea of man's inhumanity to man, the kinds of conflicts that come out in this story. I'd never read anything like this. And I think what she did was she made it okay to be critical of these characters. And I had never interacted with text in that way. It really did change me. I mean, I've had some wonderful teachers. I've had some horrific teachers. I've had teachers who had flasks in the like desk drawer kind of teachers. And I've had teachers who did real damage to me as a person, especially in my adolescence. But I don't think I'd ever had a teacher that let me engage in a critical inquiry at a time where we didn't even talk about the word critical inquiry. So I think that's really, it changed me forever. Yeah, Sharon Levy, grade 7.
You know, I picked out a specific phrase there, and not even a phrase, but more of a summary of that. It's that critical inquiry, but it, to me, to you, my interpretation of what it was to you is this looking at characters as people and ultimately as full round people and looking at them as not only what's in front of you and what's in the text, but looking at what's beyond it and the context and the who they are. And so much of that goes back to everything you said about the layers of the in the classroom and how do you reach these kids, these people, these characters in your room who are dealing with things so beyond what's directly in front of you. Mm-hmm. And even the Bobs are all about developing them and understanding them and connecting with them as fuller, whole people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting that you said that, actually. It's probably true. I mean, she connected with me and she gave us bridges. I don't know if everybody felt that way, but she gave me a bridge into the characters so that I could infer beyond what was there. It's a very interesting point. I think it's also like at that time in the early 80s, we didn't question authority a lot. I mean, Madonna wasn't coming out for another year. And that, I mean, she was all about busting out of boxes. But before that, I mean, we were really, everything was like clean and nice and sweet. So in the same way that Mrs. Levy got me thinking beyond, I think that my life in grade 7 was about to turn that way too. So contextually and in my development, that would make a lot of sense, Brad.
So Sharon Levy is the Madonna of teachers is basically what I took out of that.
She would laugh hysterically if she heard that. I told her once, because when I started teaching at the school that I just left, she was at that school, even though I had never attended it, and was retiring from there. So she was introducing me. So she was also the first teacher that ever gave me detention, because I was a very good girl, but I made a joke in her class that I'll never forget, and I got in huge trouble for it. I thought it was hilarious. It was a pun about I would do something just for the fish, you know, just for the halibut, and she didn't like the connotation of the swear word, and I stayed in for lunch the rest of the week, and I was so upset. I'd never been in trouble. It really affected me. But anyway, she challenged me, and she got me thinking, so that's why I'd put her there.
I love it. I really do. I think that's so critical. Wow. You know, I have, just listening to you across the board, I keep being struck with this thought of like, and I've had it with other guests as well, but I just wish I could go back to school and handpick my teachers. Like, if I had a choice, I would move across the country at every grade level to go to the best teacher in the country for my son to be able to go to school with. Like, and I would definitely be, you would be one of his teachers for sure. But I'm wondering, because we don't actually have the ability to do that. So I'm wondering, what is your thought? And this has kind of been occurring to me recently, but what is your thought of the struggle for a student who leaves your room next year and goes to that other teacher that hasn't changed their instructional practice in 5, 10, 15, 40 years?
I've had that very difficult conversation with so many students over the years, especially in English. And you know, I've always said to my students, if you can prove it to me in a well-constructed argument, you can be right. And they've had teachers that say, no, you can be wrong if I decide that you're wrong. I mean, I understand that problem. And my throwback to them is one of the skills that we learn in school is how to learn from different people. So yes, you want everybody to be a teacher that fills you up and that helps you see yourself and helps you understand how you learn and helps you build skill and evolve. But you also have to find ways to grow in spite of the people that are in charge of your space. And many of those teachers are those kinds of teachers. So I think it's a challenge. I know when my children have teachers like that, it's very difficult for me, especially because I've had to have some very, very uncomfortable conversations with educators, especially about my daughter who has dyslexia, and to try to explain who she is and how she's so much more than her dyslexia to them. And they don't have bobs and they don't try to see beyond the surface of the child. And it can be very, very challenging. But I truly believe that all of these experiences help us to become who we are, and that we need to have experiences that are challenging so that we can grow in spite of them and sometimes because of them. Because just because they're a different style than the way we learn best doesn't mean we shouldn't be able to learn. I know as an adult, I've had lots of bosses that I haven't been able to learn from easily. And it's been a particular challenge to try to find the sunshine and continue to grow, sometimes in spite of them and sometimes with them, even if it was against the grain. These are life skills. And if we're talking about authentic and transferable skills, that's one of them. So sadly, we can't always pick the teachers that we have, but we can pick how we handle the teachers that we have, and we can pick how we learn with or in spite of them.
That is such a, for everything I know about you and what you do, what you stand for, that is such a wholly and completely you answer. And I think that is the most perfect place to end this. I really do. I think that is, you end it on such a positive but real note. And I think going back to my quote about how you make me excited and calm, it's because there's a positivity mixed with a realism that is sometimes lost in some of the very positive people I know. And so I hope my audience got that from everything you said today. I can't imagine they didn't, because you're awesome. And how could they not? And when they inevitably feel that you're the best, amazing Bob expert in the world, how can my audience reach out to you?
Oh, well, that's easy. You can find me on Twitter at Noah's Bobs, which now makes sense to you. Or you can write to me, to noah@buildingoutsidetheblocks.com. Or you can check out my blog and see if that works for you. Or please, like, reach out to me. I'm happy to share the projects with you. I'm presenting on Monday at the Global Education Conference. I'm trying to present more and more. And I'm trying to get some things onto YouTube that are just like some of my favorite best practices. So yeah, let's talk about education and other fun things.
Absolutely. Noah, I thank you so much. This was so much fun. It was a really, truly great conversation. I really appreciate it.
And I appreciate the things that you threw back at me. I can't wait to pontificate them and come back to this conversation. So this has been so much fun getting to know you too, Brad.
Hey, thank you.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye.
Cheers.
Wow. Thank you again, Noah, for sitting with me, and thank you also for having me on your podcast, the Personal Playlist Podcast. If you're interested in listening to me talk about things beyond and almost completely unrelated to education and really get real with Noah about me, you should check out her show on SoundCloud. That's the Personal Playlist Podcast. If you want to connect with Noah, you can find her on Twitter. She's at Noah's Bobs, and that's NOASBOBS. NOASBOBS. Or her website, buildingoutsidetheblocks.com. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler, and I love to hear from you guys. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. I'm always looking to try to get some other people and new voices on here, so please reach out to me and let me know. Until next week, sit on the desk, take risks, and reach outside the framework of school. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin MacLeod and is the song Vicious, licensed under Creative Commons. This show is also a proud member of the Voice Ed Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Your voice belongs here.